Before we go on, I want to take a moment to thank the sponsor of today's episode, which is Armoire. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, you just swap them out for more new to you styles. I will admit I was a little skeptical at first because I'm not the type of person who dresses up very often, but you guys, this is actually so perfect and I'm genuinely so excited about this new membership with Armoire. And I want to tell you what the process was like for me. I got onto their website and I mean, there were so much to choose from. I ended up choosing 6 items and I was kind of like, we'll see what happens, you know, not sure how they were going to arrive, if they were going to be like noticeably used or what. But listen, 2 days after I placed my like case order, it showed up on my doorstep. Everything was like, when I pulled it out of the bag, everything was neatly folded and then tied up in this really pretty little bow. And I got so excited. I'm actually taking a trip to Dallas with my daughter soon, so I'm gonna wear an outfit for that. Austin and I are gonna go to a Teddy Swims concert, so I got an outfit for that. I'm like, you guys, I'm so excited about this because everything showed up in great condition. I mean, I think it looks brand new. And it's $900 worth of clothes that I'm renting for less than $100. And the best part for me is that I can just send it back. I don't typically dress up that often, but this is so perfect for like the random occasions that I do dress up without having to go and like splurge on an entire new outfit that I might only wear once. I will be honest, I feel guilty that over half of my closet has only been worn once, if at all. And there are even a few items that are going to Goodwill with the tags on them. So I love being on trend and having new things to wear, but I hate the waste that I'm creating when I do that, right? So Armoire allows me to rent these high quality designer clothes for any occasion and then just send it back. If you've got a wedding or a job interview or just like anything that you just want to kind of dress up a little bit. But the nice thing is they also have athleisure. So I got this really cute Kate Spade anorak jacket that I can wear with like a pair of leggings, and it just kind of makes you feel a little more dressed up while you're still dressed down. I also got some really cool floral wide leg pants from Steve Madden with this really cute denim halter like front vest top to go with it. And just in case that doesn't work out, I got another option too to go with the pants, and then I can have like kind of 2 outfits in one. You guys, I cannot tell you enough how excited I am about this. And right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/mama. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/mama to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Please try Armoire today. And if you do, tag me in the pictures of your outfits so I can get some inspiration and kind of see what y'all are getting. But this is so fun. I'm really, really excited about this. Thanks again to Armoire for sponsoring today's episode. And now back to the story.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy to see if you could save when you bundle your home and auto policies. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
This MLB season, FanDuel's Dinger Tuesday is back. And this year, all customers get a profit boost to bet home runs every week. So gear up to go yard all season long on FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in select states. Opt-in required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable profit boost tokens. Restrictions apply, including any token expiration and max wager amount. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Welcome back to Mama Mystery. I am your host, Kelly. And before we get started with today's episode, I wanted to chat with you for a moment about some exciting things coming up for not only Mama Mystery, but just the true crime space as well. So one thing I'm so excited to finally announce, and I've had people ask about this and I never knew really what to say because I was just struggling to get it done. But my first book is finally coming out May 31st, Wicked Women. It's going to be a collection of true crime stories, all crimes committed by women. There are 11 stories total, and one chapter is a bonus that we have not done an episode on, and that is Eileen Wuornos. So I do have that written out, and maybe I'll end up recording that episode just exclusive for our Patreons so I can get Austin on it, because I'm sure he'll find that story very interesting. But May 31st is when it's finally going to be coming out. You can pre-order on Amazon, or you can go to mamamystery.com, and I will have a page on there. I would recommend going to mamamystery.com and ordering it from there, honestly, because there will also be options to get it signed by Austin and or myself. So anyway, that is super exciting. I'm also really excited to potentially start working on a fiction novel. I've always loved writing. That's really what got me into true crime and podcasting in the first place. If you're new here, I started this back during COVID when I couldn't work as a hairstylist. And I always loved working. I have a degree in English from KU. I've always loved writing. I haven't always loved working, but I do love writing. And when you love what you do, it doesn't feel like work. So anyway, writing has always been one of my hobbies, I guess you could say. And so coming up with like a story, like a mystery psychological thriller, has always been a goal of mine. So maybe next year I'll come out with my first fiction, but we'll see. Anyway, until then, my first book is coming out May 31st. Go to mamamystery.com to place your order. You can pre-order it for that May 31st release date. And then also, we are going to be going to CrimeCon again this year. And if you use the code MAMAMYSTERY at checkout, you can receive a discount. I believe it's 10% off of your standard ticket. And so CrimeCon is going to be September 4th, I think, or 5th. That weekend in Denver. So if you're in the area or if you've always wanted to go, I highly recommend going. It is a chance to meet so many people. I mean, you meet people who have similar interests, but you also meet people who are a big name in this true crime space. It's allowed me to get to know other creators. It's allowed me to meet some of my idols, if you will, within true crime, like Dr. Bodden and his wife, Linda. I'm so grateful. I've also met Josh Mankiewicz and just so many people. There's creators from Dateline. There's other podcast hosts. There's investigators and people like famous investigators who worked on infamous cases. I mean, there is so much to do at CrimeCon. So if you've never been, I highly recommend it if you're a true crime fan. So, okay, I think that's it. Enough rambling from me. But yeah, if you are interested, go to CrimeCon's website and enter Mama Mystery for a discount on your ticket, and I will hopefully see you there. Now, without further ado, we're going to get into a case that has been recommended pretty often, I think. I mean, it's a very popular case, so you've probably already heard of it, but it's about the disappearance of Brian Schaefer. So let's dive in. It was the end of March 2006, and 27-year-old Brian Schaefer was ready for a break. He was a second-year medical student at Ohio State University, exhausted from exam cramming and grieving the recent loss of his mother due to cancer.
despite his fatigue and despite his dad telling him he should really just take it easy and recuperate after a week of grueling schoolwork and exams, Brian decided to kick off spring break with a Friday night out. He had dinner with his father, Randy, and then he met up with his best friend, William, who goes by Clint Florence, for a night of bar hopping near campus. Brian's girlfriend, Alexis Wagoner, was out of town that weekend, but he gave her a loving call around 10 p.m. to say, "I love you and I'll see you in a couple days." He was really excited for this tropical vacation to Miami that they had planned for Monday, but unbeknownst to everyone, that would be one of the last times anyone heard Brian's voice. Brian was known as friendly and smart and by all accounts really excited about his future. Alexis, his girlfriend of about 9 months, was also a med student, and they both had promising careers ahead of them. They had planned a trip to Miami, and it's believed that Brian actually was considering proposing to Alexis on this trip. On his MySpace page, Brian's bio said in part, "I have an awesome and amazing girlfriend. She's super hot and lots of fun." But shortly before his disappearance, Brian was struggling with a lot internally. He had recently lost his mom to cancer, and he was having a really hard time dealing with that. At one point, he reportedly asked Alexis to run away with him, and then at another point told Alexis to just move on with her life and find someone else because he was having such a hard time dealing with his mom's passing. To those who knew Brian, he also had a free-spirited side. Friends recalled Brian joking about quitting medicine someday to start a band in a beach town, inspired by the laid-back Jimmy Buffett lifestyle. This mix of responsibility and wanderlust in Brian's personality would later fuel many theories about what ultimately happened to him. As the night of March 31st of 2006 rolled on, Brian and Clint strolled through Columbus's bar scene. They started at a campus area bar called the Ugly Tuna Saluna around 9 p.m., took a few shots, drank a few beers, then moved bar to bar down High Street. Sometime after midnight in the bustling Arena District, they bumped into Clint's friend Meredith Reed, who offered them a ride back to the Ugly Tuna Saluna for a final round before they closed. The trio arrived back at the Ugly Tuna Saluna around 1:15 a.m., captured on security cameras riding the escalator up to the bar's second floor entrance. In the grainy footage, Brian appears normal and upbeat. Nothing is visibly amiss as he steps off the escalator and into the bar for last call. Now, inside the crowded bar, live music was playing and patrons were celebrating the start of spring break. And sometime close to 2 a.m., Brian got separated from Clint and Meredith in the crowd. Security video later showed Brian briefly stepping outside the bar's entrance at 1:55 a.m. just before closing time to chat casually with two young women. He seemed in good spirits, even flirty, and one of the girls, whose name was Brighton, put her phone number into Brian's phone. It looks like they actually exchanged numbers before eventually waving goodbye. The footage then showed Brian turning back toward the bar and re-entering the club entrance at 1:57 a.m., and that is the last confirmed sighting of him. After that moment, Brian Schaefer vanished. At closing time, around 2:30 a.m., the lights came on and crowds began to filter out of the Ugly Tuna Saluna. Prior to closing, which was around 2 a.m., Clint and Meredith looked around for Brian inside, calling his name over the noise. They looked around for about 10 minutes before they eventually headed out of the bar. Not finding him, they assumed that maybe he had gone to the restroom or stepped out of sight. So they waited a bit by the escalator and tried calling his cell phone, but there was no answer. Eventually, thinking that their friend had perhaps left ahead of them, maybe walking home or meeting up with someone, Clint and Meredith shrugged it off and left without him when the bar closed. It wasn't unusual for Brian to do his own thing, and they figured that they would just catch up with him tomorrow. But unbeknownst to them, Brian had not gone home at all. Brian's absence only raised mild concern on Saturday. Calls from Alexis and his family went to voicemail, but friends kind of reasoned that he might just be sleeping off a hangover or laying low. However, by Sunday, worry began to set in. Alexis couldn't reach him, and he missed a planned get-together, so she contacted Brian's dad. Randy Schaefer then went to Brian's apartment on Sunday, April 2nd, and found everything in place, but no Brian. His car was parked outside, his bed was neatly made, and his medical textbooks still lined the shelves. There was no sign that Brian had come home at all after that night out. On Monday morning, April 3rd, Brian failed to show up at the airport for the flight to Miami with Alexis, and that was the final straw. Brian was officially reported missing, and the Columbus police launched an investigation that day. When police and family began retracing Brian's steps, they were met with kind of an unsettling puzzle. The Ugly Tuna Saluna was located in a modern entertainment complex with heavy security. Because the area had a high crime rate, multiple surveillance cameras were installed around the bar's entrances. Detectives reviewed footage from the Ugly Tuna's main entrance camera and saw exactly what Brian's friends had described. Brian going up the escalator at 1:15 a.m. with Clint and Meredith, and later outside the bar around 1:55 a.m., then turning back in toward the doors. Yet no camera ever captured Brian leaving the bar at closing time. In fact, the tapes showed every single person coming down that escalator and exiting except for Brian. It was as if he had just disappeared into thin air from inside the crowded bar. But how could that happen? Investigators noted that the Ugly Tuna's public entrance, which was the escalator, was not the only way out. There was a back exit through a service door that led into a construction zone. The building was undergoing some renovations at the time. That area was dim, cluttered with construction materials, and not covered well by security cameras. One camera there panned intermittently but could have missed someone. So it was conceivable that Brian, perhaps intoxicated and disoriented, wandered out the back door into the construction site instead of using the main exit. Police thought it would have been hard to navigate that area sober, let alone drunk at 2 a.m., but it was a possibility. If he did go out that way, it might explain why the cameras didn't catch him, but it raised other troubling questions like, where did he go from there and why was there no trace of him? The Columbus police, joined by Brian's family and volunteers, launched extensive searches of the area. They scoured the construction site next to the bar, fearing that Brian might have fallen into a pit or gotten injured there. Cadaver dogs sniffed through the rubble and around the building but picked up no sign of a body. Searchers checked the dumpsters in the vicinity in case of a terrible accident or foul play. The nearby streets and alleys were canvassed and other bar security tapes in the district were reviewed, but none showed any sign of Brian after he disappeared from the Ugly Tuna's camera view. Police even went into the city's sewer system and tunnels, literally peering into every possible hiding place under the street. Divers or search teams were sent into the Olentangy River that runs through Columbus on the chance that Brian somehow ended up in the water, but nothing was found there either. Alexis would later recall of those frantic early days saying, "We looked up and down the Olentangy River, we looked in every dumpster on campus, and not a single piece of Brian's clothing, belongings, or any other physical evidence turned up. It was as if Brian had walked into that bar and never walked out. A modern urban mystery captured on camera." Inside the investigation, everyone who had seen or been with Brian that night was interviewed, some multiple times. The two young women who were seen talking to Brian outside of the bar came forward and told police that it was just a brief, friendly exchange, nothing strange, and they saw him head back inside. Bar employees, including the band that had been playing live music that night, were questioned extensively. In all, over 100 people were interviewed in the investigation, yet no leads materialized. Detectives found no evidence of a struggle or crime inside the bar. It truly seemed as if Brian had slipped out somehow and just vanished on his own. However, one aspect of those interviews did raise eyebrows. While Brian's father, brother, girlfriend, and even Meredith all cooperated fully, some even took polygraph tests to help with the investigation, Brian's friend Clint Florence refused to take a lie detector test. Clint was reportedly cooperative with giving a statement, but he lawyered up pretty quickly and distanced himself from the family after Brian went missing. To some of Brian's loved ones, this was deeply unsettling and suspicious. Derek, Brian's brother, later said of Clint, quote, "I always thought something was off with him. The way he talked about my brother after he went missing, kind of in a negative way, I wouldn't expect that from someone whose friend just vanished."
The Disney Plus Hulu Max Bundle. It's the ultimate bundle for an unbelievable price. Plans starting at $16.99 a month. Get it and watch Marvel Television's Ironheart on Disney Plus.
I want to build something iconic.
A new season of The Bear on Hulu.
We can make people happy.
And the epic, a Minecraft movie on Max.
Anything you can imagine is possible.
The Disney Plus Hulu Max Bundle. Plans starting at $16.99 a month. All these and more now streaming. Terms apply. Visit DisneyPlusHuluMaxBundle.com for details.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Derek believes that Clint knows more than he's telling, even if he wasn't directly involved. Clint's own attorney maintained that Clint had shared all that he knew and that he only refused the polygraph because he felt like he had nothing to prove. But notably, those two women that Brian was speaking with outside were never asked to take polygraphs at all, likely because police never viewed them as suspects. But to this day, Clint Florence remains a figure of intrigue in the case, at least in the court of public opinion. Now, officially, he's not been named a suspect, and police emphasize that they have no hard evidence of foul play by any friend. Yet the gap in the timeline, those lost minutes when Brian slipped out of view, leaves room for doubt and speculation about everyone that was with him that night. Now, I couldn't find any direct disparaging comments that Clint made about Brian, so my guess is that his negative comments that his brother is referring to might have something to do with a statement that he released through his attorney. So in 2008, Clint's attorney, Neil Rosenberg, sent an email to a private investigator, Don Corbett, stating, quote, "If Brian is alive, which is what I'm led to believe after speaking with the detective involved, then it is Brian and not Clint who is causing his family pain and hardship. Brian should come forward and end this," end quote. Now, this statement was perceived by some, including Brian's family, as shifting blame onto Brian and suggesting that Clint bore no responsibility for the lack of closure and that Brian made a choice to disappear. Now, as weeks passed with no signs of Brian, the Schaefer family's desperation grew. They plastered missing person flyers all over Columbus. Randy Schaefer, Brian's father, even enlisted a psychic at one point. And the psychic vaguely mentioned a water and a pier in relation to Brian's fate. This led Randy, his younger son Derek, and volunteers to put on some waders and comb through the banks of the Olentangy River, yet again searching near every bridge for a body. But it was all in vain. Nothing was found. The psychic's hint did, however, dovetail with an emerging theory swirling on the internet, the idea that Brian might have been a victim of the so-called smiley face killer. Now, this theory suggests that a group of serial killers had been targeting intoxicated college-aged men, murdering them, and dumping them in waterways across the Midwest. Brian's disappearance fit the rough pattern, being a young man out drinking, vanishing without a trace. And indeed, over the years, a few other Columbus area men had turned up drowned under similar mysterious circumstances. Columbus detectives briefly entertained this notion, but by then coroners had ruled out those other local deaths as accidental drownings and not homicides. After consideration, police publicly dismissed any connection to the smiley face murders in Brian's case. There was simply no evidence Brian had been attacked or killed, no signs of a struggle, and no body. Meanwhile, the Schaefer family endured one false hope after another. That spring and summer of 2006, tips trickled in from the public. Some were clearly hoaxes or cruel jokes. And in one bizarre instance, a man emailed Brian's dad claiming that he witnessed Brian get into a fight and be killed in a very grotesque manner, which turned out to be completely made up. Other tips were well-intentioned sightings, like a woman was convinced that she saw Brian at a diner in Atlanta, and someone else reported a lookalike man in Sweden. Each time, Columbus police chased the lead, and each time it led nowhere. The case was turning cold. A few weeks ago, I went out with some friends to celebrate some birthdays, and I don't usually drink, but I did have a margarita that night, and maybe it's because it was cheap tequila, or maybe it's because I don't drink often, but that margarita made me feel so sick, and I felt like garbage the next day. I did not sleep well, and I just woke up feeling like I needed to drink a full gallon of water just to flush out the toxins, and that's really kind of a bummer because I just wanted to be able to enjoy a drink with my girls without dreading how I might feel the next day. But thankfully, since then, I've been introduced to ZBiotics and their pre-alcohol probiotic, which helps your body break down the acetaldehyde, which is alcohol's toxic byproduct, so that you feel better the next day. So here's how it works, because I love the science behind this and I love understanding how things work. But when you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in your gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration alone, that's to blame for your rough next day. So this is a proactive way to help with the next day instead of a reactive approach, like drinking a gallon of water or Pedialyte. After that night out with my friends, I met up with them again a couple weeks later for Kansas City's Fashion Week, but this time I drank the ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. And the next day, I felt like I was on top of my game. I felt normal. I just felt like myself. I was able to go to the gym. I was able to get my work done. I was able to enjoy my kids later that day without feeling so rough. Now go to zbiotics.com/mama to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use the code MAMA at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee. So if you are unsatisfied for literally any reason, they will refund your money with no questions asked. Remember to head to zbiotics.com/mama and use the code MAMA, M-A-M-A, at checkout for 15% off. Thank you so much to ZBiotics for sponsoring this episode and My Girls Nights Out. About 6 months after Brian vanished, there was a startling glimmer of hope. In September of 2006, Alexis's nightly call to Brian's cell phone actually rang instead of going straight to voicemail. Ever since April, she had dialed his number every evening, hoping to hear his voice or just the sound of the rings, but it always went straight to voicemail until this one night. The phone rang 3 times. She said, "It scared the crap out of me. I had no idea what I would have said if a person answered it." Though no one picked up, for Alexis, those ringing tones were one of the best sounds that she had ever heard. Could it mean Brian was still alive and using his phone? Investigators worked with the cell phone provider and discovered a possible technical explanation. The phone pinged a cell tower in Hilliard, Ohio, about 14 miles away from Columbus, around the time of those rings. Now, this initially looked promising, but the phone company concluded that it was likely a glitch in the system rather than a deliberate call. Essentially, the call connection bounced through that tower due to a system error, not because the phone had actually powered on in Hilliard. Unfortunately, the mysterious phone ring turned out to be another dead end. Then tragedy struck in the Schaefer family again in September of 2008. Randy Schaefer, his dad, who never stopped searching for his son, died in a freak accident at home when a tree branch fell on him during a windstorm. The loss was devastating. Brian's younger brother, Derek, suddenly had lost his mother, brother, and father in the span of only 2 years. In the condolences on Randy's online obituary, however, an eerie message appeared. An anonymous commenter wrote, "Dad, I love you. Love, Brian." In the parentheses, U.S. Virgin Islands. This post sparked a flurry of speculation. Was Brian still alive, hiding out in the Virgin Islands and sending a secret farewell to his deceased dad? Police tracked the message and soon determined that it was a cruel hoax. The note had been posted from a public computer in Franklin County, Ohio, not from the Caribbean. It seems someone with a morbid sense of humor tried to stir the pot, adding another layer of anguish to the family. With that, the trail went cold again. Years passed with no solid leads. By 2010, many feared that if Brian Schaefer hadn't resurfaced by then, he likely never would. With such a puzzling disappearance and few facts, a number of theories have emerged over the years, from the plausible to the downright unbelievable. Internet sleuths on forums and Reddit have debated Brian's fate endlessly, and a few main ideas have gained traction in the absence of answers. One straightforward theory is that Brian somehow met with an accident inside the bar or in the adjacent construction zone, and that his body simply has never been found. Perhaps he slipped and fell into a piece of machinery or an obscure corner in that chaotic construction area. An early rumor was that he might have even stumbled into wet concrete and become inadvertently entombed when the concrete set. However, authorities pretty thoroughly searched the construction site with dogs and later completed the building with no signs of human remains. If Brian had tragically died on site, one would expect that evidence or a body would eventually turn up, but there has been nothing in all these years. Another angle is that Brian could have left through the back door and then had an accident outside. The area was urban and under heavy construction. A drunk young man wandering alone at 2 a.m. could conceivably stumble into trouble, perhaps falling from a height or even winding up in the dumpster or alley only to be missed in the search. Yet given the exhaustive searches of dumpsters, sewers, and rivers, this theory, while possible, hasn't been supported by any findings. It remains this lingering what if. Maybe Brian did suffer a fatal mishap that night, and somehow, against all odds, it just hasn't been discovered. Another theory is that Brian chose to start a new life. Could Brian have walked away from his life intentionally? This theory might sound unlikely. Brian had a promising future and loving relationships, but it's one of those that both investigators and Brian's own family have considered. Remember that Brian had been through a lot emotionally. His mother's recent death hit him hard, even if he hid it well, and he was under a lot of stress at med school. Some who knew him said that Brian fantasized about escaping the grind. He was a big fan of tropical locales like Florida and the islands, and he talked about how being a doctor wasn't really his true passion. Deep down, he'd rather run off to start a Jimmy Buffett-style beach bar band someday. One Reddit favorite idea is that perhaps Brian decided to seize the moment and disappear into a new identity, fulfilling that daydream of a carefree life. If anyone could vanish, it might be someone resourceful like Brian, and indeed, there's no proof of his death. Over the years, there have been possible sightings of Brian living under the radar. The most viral was a photograph of a homeless American man in Tijuana, Mexico in 2019 that bore an uncanny resemblance to Brian. For a moment, hope flared that he had been found alive, but after the FBI ran facial recognition analysis, they confirmed it was not Brian. Police haven't found any evidence that Brian planned an escape. His bank accounts and credit cards were never touched, and he left behind his car and all of his belongings. Those who knew him insist that he was excited about the upcoming vacation and his future with Alexis, not plotting to abandon them. Brian even had an engagement ring ready. According to some friends, he was planning to propose to Alexis in Miami. For him to vanish on purpose, he would have to be extraordinarily cold-hearted to never contact his loved ones ever again. Still, some maintain that a voluntary disappearance can't be ruled out. And it's the hope that his brother Derek clings to, that maybe Brian is out there, somewhere, alive, even if it means he chose to stay away. Now, another theory is that Brian fell victim to foul play, some kind of crime that night, either at the bar or after leaving it. The challenge with this theory is the lack of evidence or even a clear window of opportunity. If Brian was attacked inside the bar, how is the struggle unseen and his body removed without detection? It would imply a cover-up in a crowded club, which seems implausible. Nevertheless, some internet sleuths have postulated scenarios. Perhaps a staff member or a patron got into an altercation with Brian in a back room or hallway, and things went terribly wrong. In panic, they might have hidden his body somewhere in the building or transported it out of the construction area before police arrived. It's a dark idea, and no proof supports it, but the sheer lack of closure just leaves people wondering if something sinister could have happened. The fact that Brian and Clint may have argued that night, according to one witness account, they apparently had a verbal spat inside the bar over something trivial, has made some people wonder if a conflict escalated. However, there is no indication that the argument was that serious or that Clint or anyone Brian knew had harmed him. If not an acquaintance, could a stranger have targeted Brian? Outside on the street, muggings or assaults do happen, but remember, Brian was last seen inside the bar lobby, not out on the street. To be abducted or harmed, he still would have had to exit the bar into the public at some point. And some have speculated he might have snuck out disguised, for example, changing his clothes or wearing a hat to slip past the cameras unnoticed, and then encountered foul play outside. But again, no camera caught him on the street, and no witnesses reported seeing him after 2 a.m. It's as if Columbus's busy nightlife just swallowed Brian up without a sound. The serial killer theory under the smiley face banner also falls under foul play, but as noted, police found nothing to back that in Brian's case. No smiley face graffiti, which is apparently the supposed killer's signature, or any link to other victims was ever found. And if you're unfamiliar with the smiley face killer, I'll save that for another episode another day. Now, a more interpersonal foul play theory centers on Clint Florence. This theory is popular on online forums, and people ask, what does Clint know? The reasoning is largely circumstantial. Clint was the last friend with Brian. He refused the polygraph, and by some accounts, he acted oddly afterward. So could Clint have had some falling out with Brian and done something terrible? It's natural to be suspicious when someone lawyers up. Even Alexis and Derek have voiced frustration that Clint hasn't been more forthcoming, but still no evidence ever put Clint at wrongdoing. He had no known motive to harm Brian. Both men were drinking buddies and seemingly on good terms. Any bar argument that they had was likely minor. And Clint's supporters and his attorney argue that he did what anyone might do when feeling hounded by speculation. He got a lawyer and avoided the unreliable polygraph test. Indeed, polygraphs are not admissible in court for good reason, and refusing one is not tantamount of guilt. Investigators have emphasized that Clint cooperated in interviews and that they have never named him as a suspect. It's also worth noting that Clint wasn't the only person with Brian. Meredith was there too and passed a polygraph, and she has never suggested that Clint was involved in anything nefarious. Nonetheless, in the absence of answers, suspicions linger. Derek Schaefer still says that if Brian did plan to run off, Clint might know that and be hiding it. And if something bad happened to Brian, many armchair detectives believe that Clint might hold a key piece of the puzzle, even if only what he saw or heard that night. Until Brian is found or Clint speaks out convincingly, this theory will persist in Reddit threads and late-night debates. Ultimately, none of these theories can be proven, and each raises as many questions as it answers. Did Brian stage an elaborate escape from his own life? Did he die in a freak accident that night? His remains just somehow missed? Was he the victim of an undetected crime? Every scenario seems to hit a wall of uncertainty. As one Columbus detective put it, after exhaustive video analysis, he could say with 100% certainty that Brian did not leave via the escalator camera, but he cannot say how Brian left or if he left alive, and that is the enigma. As of today, Brian Schaefer has been missing for over 19 years, and his case remains one of Columbus's most infamous unsolved mysteries. Columbus police still receive tips every so often, even as recently as a couple of tips per month in 2014, but none have ever panned out. Over time, the case has generated volumes of files, but no smoking gun. In 2020, the brief buzz around the Tijuana homeless man photo proved to be another heartbreaking false alarm. Yet authorities and Brian's loved ones have not given up. Central Ohio Crime Stoppers has offered a $100,000 reward for information leading to answers, hoping that might entice someone who knows something to come forward. But as of now, that reward remains unclaimed. To reinvigorate the search, the Ohio Bureau of Criminal Investigation released an age-progressed image of Brian in March of 2021, showing what he might look like in his 40s. The idea was summed up by Ohio's Attorney General, saying, quote, "Take a close look at this image. A single tip can reignite a cold case." The updated rendering depicts Brian as an older man, but with the same hazel eyes, brown hair, and handsome, friendly smile. Authorities disseminated this image widely, holding on to hope that Brian might still be alive out there. And if Brian is still out there and sees any of the renewed publicity, the message is clear. He's not in trouble. People just want to know if he is okay. Life has had to move forward for those who loved Brian. Alexis Wagner, who spent months after the disappearance calling his phone and even leaving her voicemail open in case he tried to call, eventually found closure in her own way. By 2009, she had finished medical school herself, and coming to terms with Brian's absence, she married another man and started a family. She's now an OBGYN in Ohio. She has said that she can't imagine Brian would have ever willingly put her and his family through this kind of pain by running off, and sadly, she accepts that he may be gone. Derek Schaefer, Brian's brother, struggled immensely after losing his mother, father, and only sibling in such a short span. He keeps a low profile these days, but still wears a missing person bracelet for Brian and holds out a sliver of hope that an answer will still come. In interviews, Derek has expressed that even if Brian did leave on purpose, he just wants to know, is his brother alive or not? The limbo of not knowing is the hardest part. The Ugly Tuna Saluna, the bar from which Brian vanished, has since closed its original location and rebranded, but the ghost of that mystery still haunts Columbus nightlife folklore. Every so often, on anniversaries of that April Fool's weekend, local media and podcasts revisit the case, each time asking the same question: how can someone just disappear into thin air? Brian Schaefer's case is often compared to an Agatha Christie novel or a locked room mystery, except it's happened in real life to a real person with a real family left behind. The CCTV footage exists, but it only deepens the mystery, showing Brian enter and never showing him exit. It's a spine-chilling reminder of how a normal night out can turn into decades of unanswered questions. And, you know, we just covered the Noah Pressgrove case, and we talked about, or at least Austin pointed out, how no matter where you go these days, there's constantly security cameras, and they're everywhere. But in rural areas where there just happens to not be one is where these mysteries just happen, and people just disappear or die under these unknown circumstances that we can never seem to figure out. To this day, the disappearance of Brian Schaefer remains unsolved. His story continues to captivate internet sleuths, true crime enthusiasts, and anyone who hears it, not because of wild conspiracies or dramatic twists, but because of its utter incomprehensibility. A young man with everything to live for walks into a bar and vanishes. The simplest facts refuse to line up, and every lead has evaporated into nothing. For Brian's family and friends, the pain is both in the loss and in the uncertainty. They hang on to memories of Brian's goofy grin and big heart, hoping against hope that someday he'll walk through the door, or at least they'll get an answer to what really happened that night. But until then, the question lingers in Columbus, on Reddit, and in countless true crime discussions: what really happened to Brian Schaefer? It's a mystery that for now remains locked tight, just like the empty bar after closing time, with Brian Schaefer nowhere to be found. Now that's all for today's episode of Mama Mystery. We'll catch you next week with a new episode. Austin will likely be on it, so you can look forward to that. And until then, stay curious. Don't leave your friends alone at a bar. If you arrive together, leave together. Mama Mystery out. Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things that people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Visit progressive.com to see what you can save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.